Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast with you, Sports Radio 610. We've talked on this show about the difficulty the Texans have had getting leads in games, and a lot of that has to do with the fact they're not good on opening drives. I asked Bill O'Brien yesterday in his Zoom call, hey, this issue on these opening drives goes back to last year. Is it an issue of preparation or execution? How do you fix it?
We put a lot of time into the opening drive. We practice it. We go over it. And we do it really Friday and Saturday. And you're right. I mean, last week against, 2 weeks ago against Kansas City, we gain yards, then we jump off sides, we get in third and 10, yesterday, get it to fourth and one, we're on our own 34 early in the game. I decided to punt. I mean, look, I just think we got to keep working at it. I just think it's, something that we definitely know that we have to do better. We got to start faster, and we just, I don't really have a great answer for you, Sean, just other than we got to do a better job.
Yeah, the numbers are next level futile, and I'll admit I haven't gone through and seen what the opening drive numbers are to this degree for all 32 teams. I just know that when you have 33 opening drives going back to the beginning of 2018 with Deshaun Watson at quarterback in the regular season, and you have one touchdown in those 33 drives, and you're averaging 3.5 yards per play, that's abysmal. The worst teams in the NFL average 4.6 yards per play over the course of a season. The Texans are averaging 3.5 yards per play. Little context for you, because I think Texan fans will relate to this. Texan fans watch Gary Kubiak's offense operate. In 2011 and 2012, those are the two teams that get compared the most to these last 2 years of the Texans, because they both won the division. They both won double-digit games. They topped out at losing in the divisional round. Like, those two eras, two-year windows of Texans football get compared the most frequently. I just told you what the numbers were for opening drives for O'Brien over those 2 years. For Kubiak, with Matt Schaub as his starter, there were 26 games, Seth, 10 touchdowns and averaging 6.8 yards per play. 6.8 yards per play is elite. That would be the best offense in the league in most years, 6.8 yards per play. It's just, to me, that is one of those things that we can look at the coaching of this football team and just watch play to play with our eyes the first couple games, and at times the last couple years, and go, this just isn't up to snuff. This isn't good enough. But if you're looking for something tangible to latch onto, just a number, I think numbers are easy for people to understand. This is a big one, because this is coaching, man. Like, the first drive of the game is, you've got all week to work on that thing. And O'Brien just said they work on it on Friday and Saturday, and the numbers are abysmal.
Yeah, it's made the beginnings of games more interesting for me ever since I started paying attention to this, Sean, since you pointed it out. I feel like whenever fans are allowed back in the stands, if the Texans ever do score an opening drive touchdown that isn't led by A.J. McCarron but is led by, in fact, Deshaun Watson, we need to be sure we celebrate more than people might otherwise expect. Like, we need to fire off cannons and whatnot.
They'll fire off cannons for a 25-yard field goal. Are you kidding me? There's going to be a full-on fireworks display. What you're referring to, Seth, this is where I thought you were going with this, is the old Bronx cheer. You know when a pitcher throws like 8 straight balls and then he finally throws a called strike over the plate and the crowd just cheers way louder for that strike?
Yeah.
Like, hey, look at you, way to go. Maybe they do deserve the Bronx cheer.
But you're already going to be cheering after a touchdown anyway.
Yeah.
It's gotten to the point now where it's one of those stats that you shouldn't care too much about, but once it becomes a thing, you can't not think about it. And now you worry. I would imagine you worry if you're Bill O'Brien or anybody else, like, oh boy, now it's going to get to that. Now it's this thing where, boy, after the first drive, we don't score another touchdown, and it's a thing. It's a palpable sense from, like, ah, crap, here we go again.
Seth, this would be something for me where if I was a player, especially if I were the quarterback on the team, If I knew those numbers, I'd have the yips at this point on opening drives. I would be expecting failure on opening drive. I'm not even saying that to be mean or snarky or anything else. How are you expecting anything but failure when this is what it's been like? And this is a team. This is a team that can't afford to give away drives, especially against good teams, especially early in games. Especially, Seth, they won the toss and chose to put their offense on the field against the Ravens in that game. That's, in a weird way, over the last 33 games, that's like volunteering for suicide at this point. You know what I mean? Like, they're that bad opening up these games.
I mean, if you look at, okay, last year, first drive, maybe that's arbitrary. I don't know. Last year, the Texans were 21st in points per in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. So in the first quarter, you're not scoring all that much. And it just doesn't – it all bears out. Like, the Texans just get slow starts to football games. 2 years ago, they were 18th in first quarter points. So in that year in 2018 where they didn't score any touchdowns in the first quarter, they did manage to come back in the second, third, and sometimes fourth drives, score some more points and put something on the board.
Yeah. So, anyways, yeah, points per drive for the Texans over that stretch, 0.85 points per drive. To compare, Kubiak and the Texans offense those 2 years, 3.19 points per drive. So about four times as many points per drive on the opening drive of games.
I told you yesterday, I think somebody asked me, hey, Seth, what's Kubiak up to? You think he could come back? And I was like, well, if we're basing everything off of two games, I'm not so sure that's exactly what you want right now. But I will say, over the course of a career, yeah, Kubiak has had many, many, many more potent offenses than Bill O'Brien has, especially in a non-Brady situation.
Seth, if it keeps going like this, and look, some fans are here already, I'm going to be a little more cautious on this. Not cautious, but before we start going, okay, here are the five names that they should look at to hire as the next head coach. Like, Bill O'Brien should be on a hot seat. There's no question about it. But we are going to start talking about maybe not coaching candidates, but we should talk about this. Like, what type of offense would fit Deshaun Watson better than whatever it is they're trotting out there right now? Because we sit here and make this Kubiak comparison. I can tell you right now, I wouldn't care who it is, but if it were somebody that ran that offense, you know, LaFleur runs that offense, you know, Shanahan, like somebody that runs that style of offense that the Texans used to run with all those bootlegs, they ran them with Matt Schaub. Can you imagine running them with a quarterback who might actually tuck the ball and run in that offense? That would be really, really fun to watch. It'd be a hell of a lot more fun to watch than what they're putting out there on the field right now.
No, it'd be – oh, yeah, it'd be lethal. Deshaun Watson with Gary Kubiak as the offensive coordinator, it would be really, really good. I don't know. When's the bye week this year? Is it the eighth week of the season?
Yeah, week 8.
Boy, that's perfect, right? Yeah. You could make a decision. I think that for a while, people would ask me, hey, is Bill O'Brien on the hot seat? And I'd say, what are you talking about? They just made him general manager. No, he's got more power than he's ever had. Just completely not showing up and not competing in these games. In a year where you went all in on getting veteran players who could produce right now, and this is where the Texans don't get an excuse of, hey, COVID. Look, as far as I remember, Sean, most of the time you were reporting from training camp as one of the few people that was allowed in training camp.
Yeah.
Most of these new acquisitions weren't practicing anyway.
Nope.
So I don't know what they would have gotten with a conventional preseason that would all of a sudden have them out there running some ornate clockwork offense right now. This is, if you brought in dependable, tough, smart guys that are veteran players, then you brought them in for a reason. You wanted them to be able to produce immediately, and they're not producing immediately. We saw signs of life out of Brandon Cooks. I mean, we've had one good game out of David Johnson. We've had one awful game out of David Johnson. We'll see where we settle in. If David Johnson finished the season with what his stats are right now, would he have been worth, I don't even want to include him in the Hopkins trade, like just the money you're paying
him? The answer's no, he's on pace for like 800 yards rushing. No.
Yeah.
No.
Belkow.
Yeah, excellent three down back. I want to get your reaction to this quote from Peter King's Football Morning in America column. Because I think the Lions are a team that's pretty beleaguered right now. Oh, look, the Lions have a Belichick disciple coaching their team, this one from the defensive side of the ball, and Matt Patricia. This is a Peter King quote from his Football Morning in America column. Predictably, all the Lions stuck by their coach in the aftermath. The aftermath of what, you say? The Lions blew a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter in week one. They blew another lead against the Packers and got destroyed in week two. Again, predictably, all the Lions stuck by their coach in the aftermath, but what are they going to say? the most troublesome thing about the Lions is that Patricia was considered a brilliant defensive mind and tactician in New England, and he just can't get the defense right in Detroit. Care to Mad Lib that one?
I thought that most Patriots fans blamed Patricia for the Eagles' loss, and that it wasn't a huge surprise necessarily that year they had a really good scoring defense, but I know they also had an historically easy schedule. I know every game is hard to win, but when you're a really good team going up against a bunch of patsies in the AFC East, I don't know if Patricia was thought of as a genuine defensive genius. I know he's not a personality genius. So when it comes to like all those other things other than knowing the X's and O's, I bet a lot of people in New England, I bet a lot of them could have predicted that it would be going like it is in Detroit right now.
Yeah, I thought it would just by looking at the guy. Like, look how frumpy he is with his beard and a pencil behind his ear and a trucker cap on backwards and stuff.
Andy Reid's pretty frumpy himself.
Yeah, but at least he wears his cap looking forward and don't put a pencil behind his ear. False hustle, Seth. Pencil behind the ear. False hustle. Did he ever even use the damn pencil?
This is the problem with the Belichick coaching tree.
Yeah.
It's that Belichick, I think, hires a specific type of guy. And I think they're grinders. I think sometimes they're guys that maybe are okay being treated like crap. Like, and they work for Belichick really well. I'm not so sure, and I don't put O'Brien quite in the same category as Josh McDaniels or Matt Patricia. Like, those guys there, I don't think they're alpha guys. Like, I think they kind of like being an employee, and I don't know if they're capable of actually being the boss. Whereas I think O'Brien's got the personality for it. Yeah. There's other things that I question, and maybe sometimes he's too much of an alpha, and that gets in his way. Like, I think there's humility when he's in his calmer moments, but I don't know how much humility there is when he's in his more effort moments like he had in the Broncos game.
Seth, what am I holding in my hands right here?
You're holding up Deshaun's book, Pass It On.
Pass It On. Deshaun's new book, Pass It On. Seth and I are each holding copies of it in our hands right now. We have an excerpt. Does this excerpt match what we are seeing on the field with the Texans? Deshaun Watson, future best-selling author, next. So, Seth, you and I got copies of Deshaun's book, Pass It On, sent to us. So we thank Deshaun and his folks for sending us a copy of the book. And I've not read the whole thing yet, but I got to a part of it last night that I thought really resonated, given some of the things we've seen the first couple weeks of the season, given some of the takes that you and others have had on this team 2 weeks into the season. And it has to do with repetition at practice, and it has to do with attention to detail. And I just want to read this, and I'll read it quickly, and you tell me if this matches up with what we're seeing from the Houston Texans so far. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. Deshaun says in his book, one of the first things I came to appreciate about football at this level was the emphasis of detail. High school and high-level college play was about attention to specifics, but nothing like I experienced in the pros. When a coach instructed you to cut at just such an angle, he didn't mean approximately or roughly. He meant exactly 45 degrees, 90 degrees, what have you. If you're wondering, that's why professional teams refer to practice plays. Or he says the practice, the plays, the repetitions all focused on specific details of execution. If you're wondering, that's why professional football teams refer to practice plays as reps. The word, short for repetitions, gives you an idea of the audience level. I feel like this is targeted at maybe fourth or fifth graders in this chapter who might not. The word, short for repetitions, really means something at this level. Before you can play and win in this league, you need to have every possible detail down to the point where you merely execute it. You don't have time to think about it or remind yourself, oh, right, I'm supposed to do it this way. It's mental memory, but also muscle memory. Ideally, things happen as automatically as possible. The only way to achieve that level of consistency is by practicing the plays and the various movements over and over and over again. What is that? Does that seem like you've talked and others have talked about how they have Deshaun almost thinking too much when he gets to the line of scrimmage?
Oh, okay. Because I'm just thinking about the actual execution of the play when he's talking about that. And I guess the big thing for him, as far as the repetition and where it needs to come from, is I think he's made a lot of progress on the mental functioning side of it. And he's followed the progression that you'd like to see out of a quarterback from years one through three. They're kind of adjusting to the speed and the complexity of the NFL and learning how to genuinely read coverages and to pick up on the nuances of things. I think he's made a lot of progress there. I think, yes, he's done a lot of that. One of the biggest issues this year is that he simply doesn't have time to throw. It's not like years past where you know, it was that Deshaun might not be recognizing or understanding or seeing this threat. This year it's been, A, the offensive line hasn't given him time. B, the running backs and tight ends and receivers are running the wrong routes at times. And then C, I suppose at times it's been either Deshaun making a bad read or Deshaun with an errant throw, the way any quarterback in the NFL does. It's been really hard to kind of look and really evaluate what he is as a quarterback now this year, because everything else around him is just not stable right now. The offensive line, the receiving core, the tight ends. I mean, these tight ends have never been good blockers. Yeah. And I question their attention to ability to detail sometimes. It's all the non-Deshaun stuff. And that's why I think that we'll watch over these next few weeks. I think that the scrutiny so far has been mostly on Bill O'Brien, because it's a 53-man issue at this point. It's not really a Deshaun Watson issue.
The part, I'll tell you what I thought of when I read this part, Seth, when he says, when a coach instructed you to cut at just such an angle, he didn't mean approximately or roughly, he meant exactly 45 degrees, 90 degrees, what have you. When handing off the ball to a running back, the ball has to be placed just so to allow the runner to gain maximum control without having to slow down or alter his pace. The practices, plays, and repetitions all focus on very specific details of execution. I'll tell you, when I read that part of it, the first thing I thought of was DeAndre Hopkins. And is what Deshaun's writing here, or his ghostwriter is writing for him in this book, as conveyed to him by Deshaun Watson, could that be part of the sales pitch that Deshaun got when it was explained to him that we're going to trade DeAndre Hopkins? The precision and the frequency and the repetition that you must have, not only yourself, but with others in practice, where we know that DeAndre Hopkins basically did not practice ever. You know, he was always on the injury report, limited with a rib or a shoulder or a toe or something like that, because he didn't practice. Whereas Cooks, Cobb, Fuller's a bad example because he has actual injuries. But these are all guys they brought in who are guys that quote unquote love to practice. They love to be out there. That feels like me when I read that, well, look, I could see where now Deshaun would have it explained to him a certain way. Like, here's why we're moving Hopkins. And that Deshaun would look at that and go, okay, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, and I think that's the danger, though, too, in sometimes being too married to a vision or a theory or a philosophy. It's that, yes, that all makes sense, but nothing ever really supersedes the rule in the NFL that, man, some people are just better football players than you.
Hell yeah.
And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much you go about things the right way.
Yep.
That sometimes some dudes are just special.
Yes.
And I've made this point to you before, I think, once, Sean, but it is, the more I think about it, I find myself thinking about it a lot whenever the Texans are struggling. I think about all these Bill Belichick acolytes. There are all these Bill Belichick followers who are so enraptured in culture, you know? Like, it's all about the culture, this. You got to have dependable, tough, smart, that. All of this, and I think about it, whether it's Patricia or Bill O'Brien or Jack Easterby or Josh McDaniels or Scott Pioli, I swear, Sean, every single one of these guys would have cut Lawrence Taylor because Lawrence Taylor just wasn't the right kind of guy. Ah! Can't have him. Can't have him on this team. You know, he sets a bad example. Like, no, sometimes when you got a rare talent, you've got to accept, you got to figure out how to make it work with a guy, even if he's not necessarily going to be awake for all the meetings or show up to all the events. It's just, that's the way the NFL works. And that's why every other team that the Texans play has at least one really good player that the Texans would think that they're too good for.
Well, that's a great point.
Marcus Peters, we're too good for him.
Tyreek Hill, you know, Tyreek Hill in Kansas City, Frank Clark in Kansas City. Now, what they did allegedly, I mean, those are horrible things. Like that I get. But you're right. There's no doubt that there are guys like that who are fixtures on teams that are significantly better than the Texans right now. Independent of the culture part, because I think you're right on the culture part. But let's bring it back to Belichick in one other aspect. How about adaptability? the Texans have been banging their head against the wall with this O'Brien system for a hell of a lot longer than just the 4 years that Deshaun has been here. It's been a thing since O'Brien got here in 2014 that just the system's never worked, and it's still not working even with a great quarterback in Deshaun Watson. And I read this text. This is what makes me think of it. How can Belichick, this is a text message, how can Belichick make an offense for Cam Newton and O'Brien can't make an offense for Deshaun Watson in 4 years?
Yeah.
That's a fair point, man.
Well, the one thing where I'll stick up for Bill O'Brien with that, at least partially, because I agree, they need to make the designed quarterback run game more a part of the Texans offense. But in O'Brien's defense, I mean, it's been through a torn ACL, and I know that wasn't on a designed run. It wasn't contact. It was out of – if it actually did happen in the Seattle game, for those of you who don't know, some people have a theory that Deshaun got hurt in the Seattle game and it didn't show up until practice. Maybe he got hurt in practice, whatever. But the bruised lung, like all these things, I think O'Brien has to have a certain level of fear on just getting Deshaun hurt. The counterpoint to that would be, is he not getting hit right now? Is that, like, if there's some things you can do in the run game that can make it easier for Deshaun Watson, is him getting hit in the running game a couple times different than whatever the hell he's facing in the pocket right now?
At least in the run game, you know it's coming.
And that's where Deshaun, well, Cam has for a long time made the offensive line in front of him look way better than they actually are, because it's so hard to be a defense defending a running quarterback, a quarterback who's a part of the designed run game. And that's one of the quickest ways to fix your offensive line is to make your quarterback a more viable or more predictable part of the rushing attack. And then it's hell for defensive coordinators. Right now you're at a point where, for the most part, these read options, they're just window dressing. Nobody respects them. Nobody believes in them. Like, that's why that bootleg didn't work. The first bootleg on third and one didn't work because the defense didn't respect the fake. Yeah. They could just tell. They read it. And this is going back a few years now. And that's where, when it comes to the attention to detail, I do wonder sometimes, I'd be curious, because I've watched, I watch the way the offensive line goes through things, and maybe I need to watch Deshaun getting coached up more. There's one thing to coach about what's supposed to happen on a play and paying attention to that detail versus the actual physical technique, the actual fundamentals of, like, executing a fake and all of that. Because that's where I feel like Deshaun is behind Pat Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. The sleight of hand stuff, I don't think he's as good as them. And I go back to this is going to be my ally in this argument, Sean. Are you ready?
I'm
Brace
ready.
Brace yourself for this one.
Yep.
This is Brock Osweiler when he feebly tried to throw shade at Bill O'Brien from Cleveland's training camp a couple years back.
Oh, that he wasn't coached on the fundamentals?
The best part is I'm getting coached hard on my fundamentals, and I believe firmly something. And then he started sounding like Brock Osweiler. And then he says, I think that's something that slid last season. I'm not going to go into great detail on that, but they did. My fundamentals slid, and because of that, you saw some poor decisions and some poor throws.
Interesting. It's interesting you say that, Seth. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but as long as you're talking about that, when I was reading this part of the book, and for those just jumping in here, we're going through an excerpt in Deshaun Watson's book that is interesting given some of the travails the Texans are going through right now. When he said, when handing off the ball to a running back, the ball was to be placed just so to allow the runner to gain maximum control without having to slow down or alter his pace. Sounds like an incredible level of attention to detail. And yet, to your point, Deshaun Watson's not very good at the sleight of hand. And I think he can be. That doesn't seem like something that would be incredibly difficult for a good athlete to work on,
Some of that, what I'll say, though, too, is, because I don't want to put it on Deshaun Watson exclusively, some of that is also the weaponry around you. I mean, like when Kiki QT, think in your mind of Kiki QT running the jet sweep motion compared to any other guy that tries to run jet sweep, including DeAndre Hopkins. It's different when Kiki QT is doing it in a good way. Kiki QT has a more immediacy to his actions. Like, it just looks like there's pent up explosiveness with every step. That puts stress on a defense. Just your ability to make it 30 yards across the field really quickly and urgently, that's what puts a stress on a defense. They don't necessarily get that out of everybody else when they do that. The running backs in the backfield. Look, Carlos Hyde doesn't scare people last year. I don't know how much David Johnson's going to scare people this year. So when it comes to some of that backfield deception, the more good, scary players you have back there, the easier it is to pull off the fakes. And I, for whatever reason, I just – look, I think the casual fan could say this. I get – when I watch other teams, I, as a fan in the stands, get faked out. I don't get faked out by the Texans almost ever. Nope. I almost always know exactly whether it's going to be a boot or whether it's going to be a handoff.
It's a great way to put it. All right, Seth Payne, Sean Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. The Rockets are going to be making a coaching hire here sometime, I would imagine, in the next couple weeks. Daryl Morey's going to make that decision. What would Daryl Morey do if he were making decisions on the coaching staff with the Houston Texans? What does his history tell us he would do? We will dive into that next.
When we come out in the second half, we got to do a better job because we allowed them to drive the ball 9 minutes to open the second half. And so we did a good job at the end of the half where we were able to get the ball back to the offense. The offense did a good job on that drive of getting the ball in the field goal range. We were able to, do a situation there that we work all the time in practice. We were able to get that done to get the field goal kicked. And then we have to do a better job when we come out. That's really another area of complementary football that we have to do a better job when we come out to start the second half. If we can stop them there, now you're talking about a potential 10-point swing if you can get the ball back and score a touchdown, to start the second half. So, that's where we got to keep building and try to do a better job.
All right, so we've established with great clarity on this show today the Texans have trouble starting out the first half strong. That was Bill O'Brien on the coach's show yesterday talking about the need to start the second half better. I hate to break the news to Coach O'Brien, there's only two halves in a game. There's not a third half where you're going to be able to come out and do really. You're going to have to pick one of these or both of these and actually start to do well at the beginning of these halves.
Is that,
we're starting slow in the first half. And what about the second? We're starting slow in that half, too. Okay,
Sean,
we're out of halves.
Sean, there are 32 halves in a football season.
That is a good point.
When and where I choose to have good halves in there. Hey, sometimes there'll be two good halves in one game. Sometimes we might go four halves in a row without a good half.
That's what they've done so far. At least a good start to a half. Yeah.
During the break, I started a little film study project I'll do today where I'm taking screenshots of Deshaun with all of his fakes and handoffs just to see. Because I did this a couple years ago, and I found a couple little quirks. But I wanted to see if it's still anything, because I think he has improved on it in making everything look the same. So I was looking at these two, and I'm like, oh boy, I got to tell you, this one was a fake, and this one was a handoff. They look almost identical. And I looked a little closer, and I realized, oh yeah, that's the exact same photo. So a collation error there. That was. I'll start the project after the show when I'm not distracted.
So you've got a little project you're going to be working on Deshaun Watson's sleight of hand. I like it.
Yes.
I like it. So Seth, we know the Rockets are going to be making a decision on a head coach here pretty soon. By the way, I saw Ty Lue's name mentioned in an article that I saw online. And my immediate question was, does he get to bring LeBron with him? That would be awesome if Ty Lue, because I feel like Ty Lue is largely viewed around the league as LeBron's dude. He got David Blatt fired to bring in Ty Lue. I don't want to get too sidetracked with the hiring of the Rockets coach. That's a quick update as to where the Rockets are right now. They're going to be hiring a coach here pretty soon. But you actually brought this up last week, and we never got to. And it is interesting because I do think the Texans probably are a more analytically driven organization than we think. And if Daryl Morey, who is maybe the most analytically driven executive in all of sports, certainly he's one of the pioneers of the analytics movement within sports, how would Daryl Morey look at Bill O'Brien? Would he look at Bill O'Brien as a guy who's achieved at a certain level and that at some point he's going to break through? Or would he look at O'Brien and some of the things that are keeping him from breaking through and going, all right, these are things that just either aren't fixable or are going to regress at some point?
I would say first, by the way, just with and Tyronn Lue, I think I haven't heard anybody mention this, but I think it's important and key. One of the best things Ty Lue ever did as coach of the Cavs was halftime of the Game 7 finals where the Cavs were trailing the Warriors 49-42. And Ty Lue just basically took LeBron to task. Like Ty Lue had a way of pushing LeBron James buttons in a way that other coaches either wouldn't have the guts to do or that LeBron might not respond to.
That's a good point.
And I think that might be a little bit relevant right now in Houston. Can Ty Lue push either Harden's or Westbrook's button in a way that maybe they don't like, but that they respond to. So there's that.
More so Harden than Westbrook, but I agree with you on both fronts. Yeah.
Or Westbrook sometimes has to be told some hard truths about decision making in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
So that alone, I think, might end up being what tips the scales in his favor. But aside from all that, I would say that Daryl Morey, no, he would not look at the Texans situation right now and think that they were on the right path, because Daryl Morey pretty consistently will talk about, hey, when a team has this certain offensive efficiency and this certain defensive efficiency, then they've got a certain percentage chance of making it to the Final Four. You know, the conference finals. So, which most GMs and people always think about in terms of, like, you can't talk about winning the championship. It's a matter of getting to that Final Four. So if you look at the Texans through that lens, no, they're not close, because they've yet to have a good offense. They've yet to have a genuinely stud defense. They rank out pretty mediocre from year to year. So there's never been a point since Bill O'Brien's been here where you would say, oh, yeah, you know what? Teams like this typically make a push for the Super Bowl.
And I think it's evolved. I think the game's evolved, too, as long as we're comparing the two. The rule you're talking about in basketball is it is almost hard and fast. You have to have a top 10 defense in terms of defensive efficiency. You know, points given
unless
up per 100.
Cavs in that year that we were just talking about, but that was like a different. Unless that was like a one-off.
Because LeBron James is on the team. Yeah.
That was the exception that proves the rule. Every other year, it's different.
That's right. Generally speaking, you have to have a top 10 defense. I think in football, Seth, it's become sort of the opposite, which is backing up your point, which is you got to have an offense that, from an efficiency standpoint, is in that top third of the league. You know, I think back to a couple of years ago when the last four teams left in football were the Rams and the Saints on the NFC side and the Patriots and the Chiefs 2 years ago. The Patriots and the Chiefs on the AFC side, they were four of the top five offenses in all of football. The best defense of those four teams in terms of DVOA, I think, was the Saints, who were like 12th. So none of them had a top 10 defense. All of them had top five offenses. That's an extreme example, but I think football has evolved to that point. And just to bring this back to the Texans, yes, it's important, because if Bill O'Brien, who now has the talent level, the physical talent level on the offensive side of the ball, if this is an offense that halfway through this season is still sniffing around the high teens or low 20s in DVOA, I don't care how difficult the schedule is to start the season. You know, if you're halfway into a year with Deshaun Watson as your quarterback and you are languishing in the back third of the league in offense, it's broken, man. Your system may be broken already, but now it's breaking to the point where you are into what should be the Deshaun Watson era now. And unfortunately, you're into the era where you're going to have a really hard time over the next year or two finding fixes. I tell you what, you bring Morey into this thing, that to me is an equally interesting question, Seth, is... Your question was, would Daryl Morey keep Bill O'Brien the head coach? I'm with you. I agree with what you said. Would Bill O'Brien have would Daryl Morey have traded two first round picks for Laremy Tunsil?
Let's see. No, I don't think so.
You don't think he would have?
He's a role player. You know, the other thing I think is that, like, he's like the equivalent of a Laremy Tunsil, the equivalent of a 3-and-D guy. You want a bunch of guys like that, but you don't leverage your franchise for it. It's that
even though he protects your most important asset, and he might be your second most talented or third most talented player on the team now.
You know what you don't need to protect your most important asset? You don't need the best left tackle in the league or one that's a top 10 or anything. Like, a bunch of average offensive linemen, well coached, can protect your quarterback. I think that's and also I think I don't know how much Laremy Tunsil is helping Max Sharping or Titus Howard right this moment. They're certainly not helping Zach. He's certainly not helping Zach Fulton. I should have. If anything, I'd love to have a draft pick or two to try to continue to replace those guys or find guys that are capable of doing it. That's where, I don't think it's worth Laremy Tunsil. I don't think those two first round picks were worth Laremy
Tunsil. I agree with you, but this is my reason, is I think Morey would salivate at the idea of getting players at the talent level of a first-round pick in the NFL at the salary you're getting them at. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think Daryl Morey would salivate at the chance to have been the general manager for Deshaun Watson through the first 3 or 4 years of his career on that rookie deal and team build. And I think he would manage the cap completely differently than Bill O'Brien.
I guess, but that's the double whammy with Tunsil, where I still see people when they defend it talk about how the two first round picks were worth it. Okay, or maybe you might say, like, hey, he's worth that kind of money because he's a premier left tackle. It's the sum total of the picks and the money spent on him that's where that's the kind of stuff that if it were a one-off affair, then you might say, okay, look, they did it once. They're not going to do it again. But now they've just continued and continued and continued to overspend. And to so far, no success. Let us remind you that not a single, like, there hasn't been a shred of success since they've made all these controversial moves in the offseason. Like, at some point, they'll win a football game. Don't get me wrong. But it feels especially emotionally tough right now where O'Brien did so many things that went against conventional wisdom over the course of a calendar year. And now that you get to actually say, after a Texans fan who's probably had to sit here and say, like, all right, well, hey, look, you know what? They got a vision, and they're going to try to get a bunch of speed out on the field, and, like, this is what they're going to – and you, like, you feel almost dirty explaining it to your friends all off season, but you like your team, and you don't want to see your team get embarrassed. Well, now they're getting embarrassed, and none of the moves that Bill O'Brien made – let me think. Have any of the moves that Bill O'Brien made actually helped so far? David Johnson, I'd say he's 1-1. Brandon Cooks, I'd say he's 1-1. Randall Cobb, I would say 0-1, but with some glimmer of hope coming in. Let's see. What am I missing?
Well,
Whitney Mercilus showed some signs of life in this last game. So, I mean, I would say 1-1 on Whitney. Did he get any quarterback hits?
He had nothing that showed up on the stat sheet. No, and I rewatched the game yesterday. Seth, you took up for Whitney yesterday when I was very adamant. Like, he's getting $13.5 million a year, and there's not a tackle or a QB hit. He did collapse the pocket a couple times and force Lamar Jackson to throw the ball out of bounds.
Yeah.
That doesn't show up on a conventional box score. He's still getting paid $13.5 million. He's 0-2 with Whitney so far. He ain't there yet, Whitney, at $13.5 million a year. But Zach Cunningham is probably 1-1 this year so far. You know, he gave him $14 million. Look, Deshaun
Watson.
That's
true. Yeah, that first game by both McKinney and Cunningham. Man, when I went back and watched that, it was astounding how bad some of the tackling was. And it wasn't always their fault. Sometimes it was the defensive line not having good calf control. But McKinney, it was weird. Like, he was leaving his feet and diving when there was absolutely no reason to dive. That's where the timing, I could see where not having any preseason at all really messed up the timing with him. Both those guys, I thought, for the most part in the second game, were really making an effort to drive through contact. The only one time is when Cunningham tried to do his potato sack tackle, but just stop doing that.
Look, Seth, if we're looking at the two games, let's just boil this down. They're 0-2, and they've lost the two games by an average of 15.5 points. None of these guys are living up to what they were given this offseason or what the Texans gave up to get them through two games. None of them. Yeah. Some are trending in the right direction. Cooks is trending in the right direction. You know, he had a nice game. Cobb is trending in the right direction. He went and got five catches for 59 yards. That's what they're paying him to do. Go get five catches of the mid-range variety. But none of them have a body of work yet that's been worth the money. They're one of the worst teams in football right now in terms of the body of work.
You know who just lost a bunch of money that he was probably going to lose anyway, but now it's for certain? Likely Will Fuller.
Yes.
I think, because remember we had this conversation where, hey, what if Will Fuller has a pretty good year, but he only plays 12 games or 11 games? Then nobody's going to sign him to serious money.
Nope.
Like, if he had 16 games and stayed healthy, people might say, oh, wow, he figured it out. He knows how to stay healthy. But if he misses this game with his hamstring, I mean, that's pretty much it. Nobody's going to cough up big money for him next offseason.
Whoever he signs with after this season, whether it's the Texans or somebody else, whoever he signs with, that contract is going to be heavily, heavily game day bonused. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where it's going to be... Yeah. It's, you know, he may get a contract that could top out at $15 million or something, because when he's on the field and he's healthy, he's worth that. But it's going to be one of these deals where he has like a $3 million base salary, but he has literally like, you know, $400,000 for each game that he's actually active for. Landry Locker jumps in with us here as we get ready for In the Loop at the top of the hour. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig. What's happening, Log Dog?
On to Pittsburgh is what's happening.
Is that what we
baby.
Are? We're turning
on
the page?
To Pittsburgh, right. Baby. Are they? Do the Texans belong in the second tier? Do the Texans belong in the second tier? There's a theme song for the week. Takes me back to my second grade school program. We will start off the show with that theme song. Bill O'Brien reminds me of a second grade song that we sang at the program.
You, when you say second tier, who's in the first tier?
The two teams they just played.
Okay. So are they – and Pittsburgh obviously would be in that second
tier. They're trying to get in that first. Pittsburgh's trying to get in that first. Texans are trying to be in that second.
Yeah, yeah. The Texans trying to keep their head above water. All right, so so good stuff. You doing good? We don't get to see you on Mondays, so
yeah, I'm doing very well. I enjoyed listening to you guys on Monday. I actually got up at 6 and listened to the whole thing.
Appreciate it, man.
I did. Yeah. I had it going. I was very zoned in on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's a lot of pressure. I don't like to think about the fact that people actually listen to the show.
Yeah, I like to think it's just you and I sitting here BSing the whole time.
Sometimes people come up to me and be like, "Hey, Seth, I heard you telling that story the other day on the radio, and I feel like they saw me naked. Like, oh my God, I didn't realize people were listening."
Is that how you feel? Yeah. Is that how you feel when you hear your promos running?
Yeah, yeah, I hear the promo. Honestly,
dude, that promo yesterday was fire.
Hell yeah, it was.
That's another one that I have no memory. I was unconscious tonight when I did that. I have very little memory of that. I guess the stuff that, you know what, that speaks to that unconscious competence.
Hey.
The best stuff of the show is like where I'm not even thinking, it is just going.
Exactly.
And then I hear it later, I'm like, was that doesn't sound like
it
me.
Was you, yeah.
There was no hemming or hawing or anything.
You negatively impacted me because, so Whiskey Johnson was a theme of our Friday show because I got motivation from listening to you. And one of my mom's friends, like for the first time ever, decides she's going to listen to my show. And the first thing she's hearing is Whiskey Johnson.
Oh.
John Harris said it on the pregame show the other day. I'm like, ooh, this is edgy for Texans radio. Whiskey Johnson. Hey, quick reminder here. If you want to compete against me and other hosts around the country, the Pro Football Pick'em, it's a chance to win $1,000 thanks to Rocket Mortgage. And you don't have to pay anything to sign up. Write it down now, radio.com/picks, and go make your picks each week. And compete against me. I got to go see how I did so I can tell everybody tomorrow. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies and handy wipes to you, and also a pleasant old lady that gives you advice.
All right. Well, that was weird. We're done. We're out of time. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. In the Loop up next, everybody.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.